Continue looking at this particular healing miracle of Christ. Again, we're viewing it as a type of salvation, which I believe all the healing miracles are a picture of, amongst many other things. Again, reading with verse 1, and after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then, first after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatever disease he had. A certain man was there, which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus said unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, took up his bed, and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews, therefore, because it was the Sabbath, said unto him that was cured, It is a Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple, said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed, told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. We've seen that Jesus personally and directly dealt with this man. In verse 6, we see that Jesus saw him. We're not told that the impotent man saw Jesus, though certainly he did in process of time, but the emphasis is upon the fact that Jesus saw him. The same verse, it says, He saith unto him. So Jesus saw him. Jesus spoke to him. He saw him in a way that he did not see anyone else in that multitude. And then in verse 8 again, we see Jesus said unto him, and we saw last week that he told him to do three things that he could not do. Rise, take up thy bed, or pick up your bed, and walk. We see then in verse 9, and immediately the man was made whole. And a key phrase there is, was made whole. Was made. That's an action performed upon him. The man was made whole. He did nothing to make himself whole. This is an action performed upon him. The man was made whole. Now, I believe this is equivalent to Ephesians chapter 2 being quickened by the Spirit of God, equivalent to what we read of in John chapter 3, the new birth. As a result of being made whole, some things happened. He took up his bed and he walked. So, John records this miracle. And again, the greatest miracle here is not that the man took up his bed and walked. That is really a manifestation of the miracle that had already taken place. And the real miracle here is the man was made whole. That is, he was given the ability to now take up his bed and walk. So today we want to look at the effect of this miracle. It had an effect upon the Jews that were in that area. We see that the miracle was one of open manifestation. All could see that this man was different. In verse 2, we see that the Jews, of course, could see that he was different. Here, there he is. It's a Sabbath day. He's walking down the street and he's carrying his bed. They could see that something had happened in this man's life. They knew he'd been crippled for 38 years, and now he's walking. And now he's carrying his bed. And he's doing so without any difficulty whatsoever. I don't believe he's limping. I don't believe he's struggling, carrying his bed. He's walking, and he's carrying his bed without any difficulty whatsoever. This puzzled the Jews. And when the Lord saves a sinner, those who know that sinner are puzzled. That is, those that are lost are puzzled. What happened? Again, if you have a type of salvation that does not puzzle the lost, I doubt seriously that you have salvation. There was such a manifest change that it puzzled the Jews that knew this man. Having a hatred for Christ, having a hatred for everything that Christ represented, they immediately sought to discredit what had taken place. And how many times you see lost men doing that? Perhaps their child is saved. And lost mom and dad try to discredit it by saying, well, it's just a phase they're going through. That's just an attempt to discredit what has really happened. And we see this is what the Jews did. And they, again, beginning in verse 10, they said to him, "Did you know it's not lawful to carry your bed on the Sabbath?" He answered them, "He that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk." At this point in this man's life, he did not know much, but he did know some things. And he knew that there was a man who told him to rise, take up his bed, and walk, and it happened. He knew that. He knew that something had happened to him. And he tells the Jews what he knew. "Then asked they him, What man is this, or is that, which saith unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk?" And then when it was revealed that this was the healing work of Jesus Christ, you see, the lost world would much rather believe that a person who has been saved is just going through some phase, they'll get over it. They'd much rather believe that than Jesus Christ has done something in their lives. And when these Jews found out that it was Jesus, they were enraged. And they began to manifest the hatred that was already in their hearts. And they began to manifest the malice that was already in their hearts. What happened here didn't put the hatred in their hearts. What happened here didn't put the malice in their hearts. What happened here caused them to manifest the hatred and malice that they had in their hearts. And we still see the same thing today. So in verse 15, the man departed, and he went and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus. And they sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. So we see that it had an effect upon the lost. And when God saves a soul, it does have an effect upon all the unsaved associated with that person. Again, manifesting the great change that takes place. But more importantly, this miracle had an effect upon the healed man. It had a great effect upon him. We see the first thing we notice is the man's way of living was outwardly changed. In verse 10, he's walking down the street. Why isn't he still hanging around the pool? Why isn't he still lying under one of the porches? Because his life has been changed. And it is manifest in his walk. So he's no longer laying on his bed at the pool called Bethesda. He's no longer waiting around that pool for the stirring of the water. He's now walking. He's now carrying his bed. In other words, there was a manifest difference in the way that this man now lived. Now, if this man would have continued to lie on his bed, continued just laying there at the pool, waiting for the stirring of the water, and this man were to tell you, Jesus Christ came here one day and he healed me. And I was able to stand. I was able to pick up my bed and I was able to walk. Would you believe him? There's nothing to prove that Jesus healed him if he's still laying at the pool. It'd be like if Brother Art came in late and it's not normal for him to be running late and he's out of breath and he says, "You're not going to believe what happened to me. I crossed the street and I got run over by a bus. 60 miles an hour. Bus ran over me." Would you believe him? Doesn't have a mark on him. Mean to tell me a bus hit you at 60 miles an hour and it didn't leave any impact whatsoever? Well, Brother Art says it happened. It must have happened. Well, you'd be a fool to believe that. And yet that's what people want you to believe today. The Lord saved me. I'm still a drunkard. I'm still a drug addict. My life hasn't changed one iota. It has made no impact on my life, but the Lord saved my soul. And people's response is, "Well, you know, we got to believe them. That's what they say." You don't have to believe them. I mean, that's outrageous. Just as it would have been outrageous for this man to continue living his life as he always did and then tell everybody that came in sight, "The Lord saved me. I know I'm saved. I know I probably shouldn't be lying around this pool, and I've never really left this pool, but I know I'm saved. I know I've been healed." You wouldn't believe a word of it. And once again, if the Lord saves a sinner, there is a manifest difference in their life. And it is manifested in the outward life. Secondly, we see the man felt a debt of gratitude toward the one who had healed him. When the Jews said in verse 10, "It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed," the man no doubt was puzzled that these Jews would find something wrong with what had taken place. And many who the Lord saves, when they're first saved, they go and tell people that they think are going to be happy to hear this. And it's somewhat puzzling when you tell them and they're not so happy. And they find something wrong with what you're telling them. And that's how it was here. These Jews actually found something wrong with what had transpired in this man's life. So the man, somewhat puzzled, simply answered, "He that made me whole." He that made me whole. He realized that he did not make himself. He did not make himself whole. even those today whose theology is twisted and warped concerning the salvation of a soul, if they're saved, the day the Lord saved them, they knew that it was the Lord who did it. Now, since then, they may have gotten caught up with some twisted theology, and they haven't really thought this thing through. But one who is truly saved, they know that it was the Lord that saved them. This man didn't say, you know, this man came, I repeated a prayer, and wow, here it is. He said, he made me whole. The man that made me whole. It goes on to say, the same. The very same one who made me whole. Again, he is answering their protest that he was walking and carrying his bed on the Sabbath day. He said, a man made me whole. A man performed a miracle in my life. And that very same man told me to take up my bed and walk. It just seems reasonable to me, this man is saying, that he healed me, I should listen to what he says. And that's true. He felt a debt of gratitude. He felt a debt of obligation. He that made me whole, the same said. That's the only argument, for lack of a better word, that you need. The one who saved me said to do it. That's all you need. That is the foundation of obedience. So it just seemed reasonable to this man that he should obey the one who had performed such a miracle in his life. And it just seems reasonable today that you and I that are saved ought to obey the one who saved our soul. That's just reasonable. It's unreasonable to disregard the one who saved us. It's unreasonable to do everything contrary to the one who saved us. This man knew that it was this man had made him whole, and he felt a gratitude and he felt an obligation. He also had a desire to worship. We see in verse 14 that Jesus would find this man whom had been miraculously healed, miraculously delivered from the bondage of his past life. He wouldn't find him at the pool. And if the Lord saves a soul, you go looking for that individual. You say, you don't go looking for him in the bar. You go somewhere else. His life's been changed. Jesus didn't go looking for this man at the pool. He knew he wouldn't be there. But he found him in the temple. And I believe this man, to the best of his ability, again, he didn't know much, but he did know this, that a man had worked a miracle in his life. And where did he go? He went to the temple. He went there to express his gratitude. He went there to worship the Lord. This man also had a desire to exalt Christ and tell others about him. Again, in verse 10, when the Jews first questioned this man about Jesus, in verse 12, the man did not know who it was that healed him, because Jesus didn't reveal himself as Christ. Jesus left because of the multitude of people that were there that day. So Jesus goes and he finds this man in the temple. And I believe it was there in that temple that Jesus revealed himself more clearly to this man. He identified himself. And this man is now, he already was full of gratitude and praise. But now he knows it was Jesus that made me whole. And with even greater gratitude, even greater praise, and greater zeal, in verse 15, he went and told the Jews. Now these Jews were angry. But he went and told the Jews that it was Jesus, which made him whole. And we can just picture this man. He's saying, here I am, I'm standing. I haven't done this in 38 years. I'm carrying my bed. I'm walking. And it's all because this man, Jesus, made me whole. He was not ashamed to tell others that it was Jesus. And when the Lord saves a sinner and people, the lost around them say, it's just a fad, just a phase, they'll get over it. The truly saved individual just keep on insisting, no, this isn't a fad, this isn't a phase. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that made me whole. And this man, knowing this, could not help himself. He had to go and tell these Jews. Jesus was everything that this man needed. Jesus had made a difference in this man's life. For 38 years, this man was just surviving, just trying to survive each day. Now he's no longer just trying to survive, but he's thriving. He's carrying his bed, he's walking. And it's all because of Jesus. Now notice, back in verse 14, when Jesus found this man in the temple, he gave him some assurance. He said, thou art made whole. Thou art made whole. Again, that's the miracle. That is the miracle. The man was made whole. The miracle is the new birth. That's the first miracle that must happen. And everything else is the manifestation of that. Thou art made whole. And then he instructed him. And his instruction took the form of a warning. This man is saved. It's a type of salvation. And Jesus tells him, sin no more. That should be the goal of every child of God. But there was a danger. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. Now, those who deny eternal security, this is one of the verses that they use. They will say that Jesus was telling this man that if he sinned, if he continued in a life of sin, he would lose everything that has transpired. That's not what Jesus is saying. What we need to realize here, lest a worse thing come upon thee. What's he talking about? Worse than what? Well, this man had an infirmity for 38 years. For 38 years, he couldn't walk. That's pretty bad. And Jesus said, lest a worse thing, something worse than having an infirmity for 38 years. What children of God need to realize is there are far worse things than bodily disease. There are far worse things than you and I losing our health. What does sin do in the life of a child of God? It breaks fellowship with God. And let me tell you, that is a worse thing than physical disease. That's worse. Today, if we learn that one of our children has a deadly disease, we're going to get upset. It's going to bother us. And nothing wrong with that. But what ought to bother us even more, if someone comes to us and say, and we learn that they have slipped into a life of sin, that ought to bother us more. Because the consequences are worse than bodily disease. They lose fellowship with God. Losing fellowship with God, there's a chain reaction. They lose joy, they lose peace, they lose power. And on it goes. And they're headed for a life of misery. So what I'm saying is, there's a worse thing than getting news you have cancer and you've got 6 months to live. You have this disease and you're... What's even worse than hearing you've got cancer and you've got 6 months to live, you have this disease and you're going to have it for the next 40 years. And you're going to suffer greatly. That's far worse. But I'll tell you what's worse than that. Is for a child of God to fall into a life of sin. The consequences of that is even greater. Lest the worst thing come upon thee. My point is that sin ought to be a fearful thing in our lives. And I believe that was what Jesus was instilling in this man. That sin is a fearful thing. Sin is a very dangerous thing. Sin is something that has very dire consequences. He did not say that you'll become crippled again. That's not what he said. He said a worse thing will come upon thee. Something far worse. And so it is. When children of God become entangled in their former ways, something far worse. Something far worse than physical disease has come upon them. And we need to, again, when we get our priorities right, where the spiritual is more important than the physical, we don't have any trouble understanding what Jesus is saying here. But those who have been made spiritually whole need to live for the one who has made them whole. And this man had the desire to do that. And I believe with all of my heart that those whom the Lord saves, every one of them has a desire in their heart to serve the Lord who saved their soul. Now that desire may become buried under a lot of rubbish. If you dig through all the rubbish and you get all the rubbish of what moved away, that desire is there. I believe it's an inborn trait of the new birth. Every child of God has it, a desire to serve the one who saved their soul. Let's look to the Lord.